This podcast is part of the MyPodcast.com network. Go online right now and get your very own 100% free podcast, MyPodcast.com.
You've got your Bibles. Go to Ruth. If you need a Bible, hold up your hand. We've got some extras back there we can share. Old Testament. You're looking in Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, and Ruth. If you had a good Bible, it's on page 402.
Making me lazy.
You were already lazy.
You had never been lazy in your life.
Papa wouldn't stand for it.
That's right.
I'd get a boot if I wasn't busting a movie.
We'll get everybody a chance to get there. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus.
Ruth.
It is in the Old Testament. Ruth. Let everybody find it. I was in a Bible class the other day where I had them turn to Isaiah, something like that, and everybody just went, and they were right there. I didn't know what to do. And I thought, man, I've gotten used to us taking our time to find things, you know. We start learning. All right, you found Ruth?
That's funny that you mentioned that because I just did it.
There you go. Of course, we're not in Isaiah, so turn to Ruth and shut up. Okay, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. And that's old tape. I'm so glad we taped these lessons. Over the last several weeks, we've talked about people that God used. And most of the time, it was obvious, at least to the person that we were discussing, that there would be no way God could use them. I'll give you an example. Moses. Moses had thought when he was 40 years old, he thought he was the man for the job. He stood up and told all of God's people, said, it's time for us to go back to the promised land. I am your leader. That's interesting. I've heard folks say that it was Moses' fault that they rejected him. But if you read back in Hebrews 11, it was by faith he tried to do that. He supposed that the folks understood. So he thought it was time. And it was the people that rejected him. They basically said, no way, Mose, and they did rejected him. So he ran off and hid for 40 years. For 40 years, he convinced himself he was a failure. 40 years, he convinced himself that he couldn't do the job. 40 years, he convinced that God would never be able to use him. And that's when God called him. Give me somebody else.
Gideon.
How about Gideon? When you first meet Gideon, when God finds Gideon, where's he? He's hiding in a wine press. But what's he doing in a wine press? Pressing grapes to make wine? He's beating out the wheat, so he's hiding in a wine press to beat wheat, to hide from the... Well, and so this angel approaches him and said, Gideon, you're a mighty man of valor. Gideon's first response is, same as Moses, who, me? Are you kidding me? There's no way I could be. Name one more person. How about Samson? Now, Samson's parents were the ones that had a hard time believing it at first. All of a sudden, they couldn't have a child, and all of a sudden, they're going to have a child, and he's supposed to be a special child, never cut his hair, never touch anything dead, never touch anything that's made with grapes. And when he's born, he shows he has great power and strength, except when it comes to...
self-control.
Women.
Yeah, women and... His biggest enemy was himself. He had trouble with his flesh. He liked the taste of honey, so he touched a dead carcass of a, which would be against what God's will was for him. And he let Delilah cut his hair because he couldn't withstand her tears. But in all of those cases, what did we learn? Draw a conclusion for me. You've been with me along the way. There's some fresh faces, so let's catch them up. What do we learn? God still uses those people. Therefore, God can use us. What do I learn from those stories? What do I learn from stories about David who sinned and God still wanted him to sit on the throne? What do I learn about stories like Elijah who faced down the enemies of God, called fire from heaven, but then in depression ran off to hide and couldn't find the strength to even run anymore? What do I learn from those stories?
We're usable by God.
Yeah. We're usable by God. Finish the statement. We're usable by God, .. What?
To do His will.
It's His power, not ours.
Even though we're goobers.
And that's the Hebrew word for it. But so when I feel like I'm at my lowest, when I feel like I'm at my most worthless, when I feel I'm at my weakest, when I feel that I'm at my farthest away from God, it may very well be the time that God chooses to use me the most and give me the most strength. Because if somebody who can't do what Moses said he couldn't do ends up doing what God wants him to do, who gets the credit? God does. And that's the whole point of this. So, I don't know the situation. I don't know the situation when it will come. I'm telling you, I think it's coming for a lot of us just in this little place right here. Because some of you, since you've been here, have been used by God to reach someone else, and you didn't think you were even worried that he'd go to church anymore. But it's happening, and you see it happening here. And we see that here, and I don't know how it'll happen in your life, but there'll come a time when God wants to use you for something, and the first thing out of your mouth, first thing coming from your heart's going to be, who, me? Or no, it can't be me. I'm either too sinful, I'm too weak, I'm not as good as somebody else. Whatever the excuse is basically confirmation that God chose right. God chose correctly. He chose you. Because he wants to pick somebody who can't, so that when it happens, everybody knows that he can. We're looking at Ruth now. She had no such questions, but she had that kind of life. Tell me what you know. First chapter of Ruth, tell me what you know about Ruth. You'll find out that she was a Moabite. That means she comes from the country of Moab. She was married to a Jewish fella whose mama's name was Naomi. But what do you know about her? What happened? Husband dies. Now stop a second. I don't know that we've got any widow ladies here, but tell me, project for me. They would tell us. If they were sitting here, they'd tell us what that means. Tell me what it means. Your husband dies. Back in that culture, that day, your husband dies. Yeah, you go to his brother. You belong to somebody else in that family. Now, if there wasn't another brother, because the other brother had died as well, what happened to you? She's going to need somebody to take care of her. Or she's going to have to take care of herself. Was there life insurance? Social Security like we know it? Welfare? No, they had a welfare system, and it's interesting. It's a really kind of interesting discussion to get into about how a nation took care of its poor. But interesting here, her husband dies, her sister-in-law's husband dies, the two brothers die, and then her father-in-law dies. So that leaves three widows in one family. What does the mama, what does the mother-in-law say? What does Naomi tell her? Just read what it says, okay? So you know exactly. She said, what word am I reading? Then Naomi said to her two daughter-in-laws, we're in verse 8, go back each of you to your mother's home, and may the Lord show kindness to you as you have shown to your dead and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband. Then she kissed them, and they wept aloud. And she said to her, we will go back with you to your people. But Naomi said, return home, my daughters. Why should you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons so that you could have husbands? Return home, my daughters. I'm too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters, it is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has gone against me. And they wept again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. What's going on in the family? Tell me how they feel. We read it black and white. I read it just flat, off the page. But these are people, so how did it feel? Here's a young woman who's lost her husband. Everything changes.
In that time, you know, everything was about taking care of that husband and supporting that home. There was no dream past that. You know, there was no future for her. You know,
there was not a career. There was not a career. There was not an education. There were not separate lives. Her husband was her life, and the family they were going to raise together. He's gone. Like that, he's gone. She turns toward her mother-in-law, and her husband has now died. It leaves all of them without hope, without help. And how does Naomi feel? How does Naomi feel? I want you to look at verse 20. Tell me how Naomi feels about her life. She says, don't call me Naomi anymore. Call me... Now look at that. Find what Mara means. Look in the text. See if you can find it. This, usually it'll be written in the small letters down at the bottom of your page. Mara means bitter. Now Naomi meant pleasant. So if you use the words mean anything, if the names mean anything, Naomi was a pleasant woman, and she welcomed these two daughter-in-laws into her family, and it was a lovely family, and her two sons were strong, and I'm sure they were handsome, or at least she thought so, and they were intelligent, or though she thought so, and then they died, those two girls are left to her, she says, leave me, because God has turned his hand against me, and she says, I can't take care of you, go back home to your mama so they can take care of you. Now, Orpah does it, but what does Ruth do? It says Ruth clung to her. Tell me why. Now, I'll let you say whatever you want to say. Tell me why. Why did she cling to her? The text doesn't say, but I want to hear what your emotions or motives think. You might think her motives be. She's vulnerable.
It's the only thing familiar to her.
It's the only thing familiar to her. Why didn't she go home to mom? Why didn't she go home to her mama? Why didn't she go home to her daddy?
They both share the same loss.
All right. She doesn't... We don't know what her family would have been like. But maybe she stays with Naomi because they now share the same sorrow. They share the same love. She loved that boy. Naomi loved that boy. Now they've lost that boy. What else? Why do you think she clung to her? And you can't get it wrong. You're just telling me what you feel, what you think.
She knew Naomi needed her.
It may have been devotion. Naomi needs me. Because now she's old without somebody. I need to take care of her. Why else could it be? It could be that she's heard about Naomi's God and she's not impressed with the way her parents raised her, so she wants to get to know this God of Naomi. Now, Naomi right now at this point is not a real advocate, not a real evangelist for her God. God's hand's against me, leave me or he'll smack y'all too. I don't know that there was a lot of good news there. What else? What could have caused Ruth to make this kind of decision? All right, she has a tie to Naomi.
She loved her.
Maybe she loved her.
If Naomi had been a solid person through the relationship, through the marriage to the son, maybe Ruth felt that was the only stable thing that she could find.
Yeah, and if she was pleasant, that might have been a great thing. Now, all of those things, though, put in contrast to your mother. She's closer to Naomi than she is her mother. Now, can that happen? It sure can, and there are people in this room that understand that kind of thing. And what I'm about to say, and make sure you understand, we have always attributed to Ruth a devotion to Naomi, a devotion to God. I have no problem with that, because she lives it out. But she could very well have chosen to go with Naomi because there was no place else to go. It could have been desperation. Because sometimes when you don't have any place else to go, how do you react? Think it through. When you have no place to turn, when you have nowhere to go, how do you react? You cling to what you have. Have you ever known a woman who's been beaten by her husband, or any husband who's been mistreated by his wife, where they stayed in the relationship, and they stayed and they stayed and they stayed because that's all they had. They had nowhere else to turn. When you don't have any place else to go, what do you do? Let me tell you what I think Ruth teaches us, and this is where we'll start at least part of our learning, is if you're going to be in that kind of situation, you do what you have to do to survive. Watch her. She goes back home with Naomi. I love what Ruth says to her. Verse 16, don't urge me to leave you or turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. And may the Lord deal with me ever so severely if anything but death separates you and me. And I love the statement, and it may be born, it may be attributed to great love and devotion. I'm not arguing with you. I agree. It could also be that she has nowhere else to turn and out of desperation has to make this kind of commitment. It doesn't matter if she chooses it out of love or if she claims it because of desperation. She lives what she says. She keeps her word. Watch what happens. They get back. They get back to Bethlehem. It's the time of harvest. Naomi is bitter. She wants to give up on life. Ruth is still a young woman, and she's got to survive. So look what she does to survive. All right, look at verse 2. Now Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, let me go out to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone whose eyes I find favor. Naomi said to her, go ahead. So she went out and began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters. And as it turned out, she found herself working in the field belonging to Boaz, who happened to be a kinsman. Let's stop a second. If you've not grown up on a farm, if you've not done anything out on a farm, somebody explain to me gleaning. It says she picked up the leftover grain. She began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters. What's gleaning?
Picking up the leftovers.
It's picking up the leftover grain. How did they harvest the grain? Not a combine. It was by hand. They took a knife, a scythe, and they cut it, right? As they gathered it up, what would happen with some of the grain, some of the kernels? It'd fall out of the head, out of the head of grain. It'd fall in the dirt. They weren't allowed to pick that up. It was a part of God's law. You don't pick up what's dropped. And they're also taught, don't cut the corners of your field. They were to leave the corners for the poor. That was the way that was their welfare system. So if folks didn't have anything, then they could come and have grain. But what did they have to do to get it? They had to pick it up. They had to work to do it. They had to do something to get that benefit. Did it cost them anything? Was God taking care of them? They had to do some work, right? All right, anyway, Ruth has gone to glean. As she starts picking up the leftover grain. Now, what would you do? Think it through a second. Leftover grain. How much is going to fall out of a handful? I take an armful, I gather it up, and I cut it. What falls out? 2 or 3 bushels worth? And it stacks up in one place. What's Ruth doing? What's Ruth doing? Right, how's she doing it? This is hands and knees kind of work. Now, if she's in the corner of the field, she can cut some. But if there's other poor people out there doing the same thing, what are they doing? They're all doing the same thing. They're digging through the dirt. They're picking through the straw, trying to find the kernels. All right, trying to find any heads of grain. How long does it take you to get a small basket full? How about a bushel? How long would it take you to fill up a bushel? This is get out early, stay out late kind of work. Keep reading. Now, verse 4. No, stop a second. Just hang on. What's Ruth's life like? She thought now when she married this Jewish fella, what kind of dreams might she have had? What does she know about the Jewish people? God's chosen people. They've been promised things. So did she think maybe that they were going to have it okay? That they were going to have lands and orchards and crops and servants, flocks and herds? Had we seen anybody else that ever had that? Now her husband dies, and now what's she doing? She's cleaning up after somebody else. She's, in our culture, it'd be almost like digging through the dumpster. So what do you do when you don't have anything else to do, when you don't have any place else to turn? You survive. You do whatever it takes to survive. Well, I used to hear people all the time say to me, said, well, I'm looking for a job. And I'd tell them, well, okay, here's a job. And they said, well, no, I don't want that kind of job. Okay, I understand you don't want that kind of job. Tell me what you want. And they'd tell me what they want. I said, well, I don't have a job like that. And they'd say, well, but I really need a job. And I'd say, well, okay, what about this job? Well, that's not the kind of job I want. What were they telling me? They wanted a position. They wanted one that matched their stature in life. They weren't worried about surviving. And that's their choice. No criticism, just their choice. But if you have no hope, what do you have to do to find hope? First thing is you've got to survive. Do what you have to stay alive. Ruth digs through that dirt and through that grain to find some grain so she can feed herself and Naomi. Now Boaz, the near kinsman, Boaz greets the harvesters and he said, the Lord bless you. And they said, the Lord bless you. Boaz asked, said, who's that young woman over there? And the foreman said, well, she's a Moabite widow. She came back home with Naomi. And she said, can I glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvest? Behind the harvest? And she went into the field and worked steadily from the morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter. So Boaz said to Ruth, my daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field. Don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls. Watch the fields where the men are harvesting and follow along with after the girls. That I have told the men not to touch you. And whenever you're thirsty, go get a drink from the water jars that the men have filled. What just happened for Ruth? What just happened for Ruth? There was kindness. Small kindness. And I don't know all the applications to make, except I've seen it in my life. When you don't think anything can get worse, when you're just focused on surviving, and there's some people in this room right now who know exactly what I'm talking about. When you've had to give up everything that you were, everything that you ever intended to be, and you had to start all over again, and you're just trying to just survive, start looking. Not only do you work hard at it, but start looking for ways that God shows His kindness. Boaz spotted her. She didn't seek him out. Boaz spotted her and showed her kindness. Now, at this, he bowed down. She bowed down and put her face on the ground and exclaimed, why have I found such favor in your eyes that you would notice me a foreigner? And he says to her, said, you're kin to Naomi, and there's a kin relationship there. Verse 13, she said, may I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord? You have given me comfort and have spoken kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servant girls. Look for God's kindness. Now, what would you have been praying for? If you were Ruth and your husband's dead and you're searching through, and I don't know if it's the exact equivalent, but you understand it's graphic enough to get our attention. She is going through the dumpsters. And she's picking up food that's left over. She's picking up food that's left over. I'm not talking about picking up trash. I'm talking about she's digging through dumpers and she's finding the donuts that got thrown out at Krispy Kreme. She's finding the chicken legs that get thrown out at Kentucky Fried Chicken. And so she's digging through the dumpsters. And somebody, what's her prayer? What's her prayer while she's doing that?
Just keep me alive.
Keep me alive. Help me find something. What would we be praying? Honest, what would you be praying? Ooh, I don't want to see somebody find me. I don't want somebody to find me. Might want chocolate-covered donuts, yeah. I'm not sure I would worry about it. What else? What would she be praying? Here's what we want to do sometimes. Nothing wrong with it. But we want to pray, God, I want a husband. And I want him to come get me today. Okay, is that possible? I guess in some circumstances that could be possible. But what we start doing is wishing instead of praying. Is God about to answer the prayers of her heart? Yes. But he does it first by showing her kindness. And all of a sudden, she just met her future husband and doesn't even know it. But he offers her kindness. Work hard, survive, and watch for God to give kindness. Verse 17. I love what Boaz tells his harvesters to do, though. He says, pull out some extra grain for her. Lay it on the ground so she can get it. Don't you let her, and you let her pick among the stalks or the bundles, and don't you rebuke her. Verse 17. So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley that she had gathered and amounted to about an ephah. Wasn't like a bushel, was it? She carried it back to a town, and her mother-in-law said, how much had she gathered? She brought it out and gave it to her. I want you to notice verse 18. I don't know how it fits into the lesson that I'm teaching, but I want you to read the statement so that you'll know it. So the next time we talk in my office about something that's going on in your life, you'll have understood this lesson. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. What did I just read? What did you just learn?
She ate first.
Ruth ate first. Folks, this goes against. We have grown up hot house, McDonaldland kind of Christians. And I'm all for Jesus first, others second, or others, how's it go? Jesus first, others second, and yourself last, right? I think the song goes, Jesus first, yourself last, and others in between. J-O-Y, got no problem with that, except when we have taken that and we've not applied it to real life survival things. If Naomi is going to survive, what does Ruth have to do?
Survive.
Ruth has got to survive. Now, on the airplane, they already know this is true. You're on an airplane and it starts to go down and they say, little oxygen mask going to fall down from the ceiling. When they fall down, what are you supposed to do? And I've asked people this a gillion times and watched them, especially real Christian people, very Christians that are very spiritual, get it wrong 9 times out of 4. I'll say, whose mask do you put on first? Your mask or your children's? Oh, you put it on your children's mask first. Because if you put it on your children's mask first, guess what? You'll never make it because you're not breathing. If you're not breathing, they're not breathing. Who had you better keep alive? Yourself. Did Jesus teach us that principle? Do you ever remember a time in your study of Jesus' life where he sent the crowds away? Do you ever remember Jesus going up on a mountain and telling his disciples to leave him? If you haven't read it, it's there. Find those texts. Start in Matthew 1, read to John 21. It's in between there somewhere. But you'll see it in the book of Mark. You'll see it in the book of Matthew. You'll see it in Luke. That what Jesus does is understands, if I'm not breathing, they can't breathe. Ruth focuses on survival. Looks for kindness. But she recognizes, While I want to take care of Naomi, I can't take care of Naomi if I'm not strong. If I'm not strong enough, if I haven't eaten, I can't feed her. I love the way she does here. Naomi talks to Ruth about how she needs to treat Boaz in their culture. Ruth follows Naomi's instruction, goes to Boaz at night, uncovers his feet. Now, there's not anything shameful here. There's nothing sinful. It's very romantic. But it fits into their culture. She is basically submitting to him and saying, "You are my near kinsman, and I would like for you to take care of me, but I'll give you the choice. Are you going to do that or not?" He says, "Oh, I'd love to do that." He works through some cultural issues. What I want you to notice, and then we'll draw a conclusion, is what happens after Boaz marries Ruth. The moment Boaz marries Ruth, what happens to all of those fields? They become hers as well. Does she have to glean grain anymore? Does she have to deal with a little old handful of grain to feed her mother-in-law anymore? What did God just do? He answered a prayer. Now, he provided when she had a place to glean. I want you to find another word for me. What did God do? He blessed. What did God do?
Wasn't expressing.
Bible talks about God answering the desires of your heart. What did God do for? Give me another way to say it.
She
might never have asked to have that kind of blessings, that kind of wealth, that kind of influence. But that's what God gave her. I can't help but think of the text in Luke 6 where Jesus says, when somebody gives of themselves, when people give, He will give it back to them pressed down, shaken. Why do you shake it? To make it settle so you can hold more. So you push it down, you shake it, and then how much does God give you? It's running over. That's what God did for Ruth. When you're in a situation where you cannot survive. You just know it ain't. My life's over. And it could be by your own fault or it could be the fault of someone else. It could be just circumstances. It puts you in a situation where you can't survive. Number one, survive. Stay alive. Because God can't bless you unless you stay alive so He can bless you. So stay alive. Number two, to keep from losing completely, hope completely, look for His kindnesses. Look for blessings that come from Him. It may be in a man noticing you. It may be in somebody helping you. It could be somebody giving you a job. It could be somebody forgiving you. Look for some kindness from God. Number three, let's put it this way. Keep your promises. Ruth promised she'd take care of Naomi, and she did it. She shared her food with her. She stayed with her. Even when she got a husband, she took care of Naomi. So keep your promises. And then watch what happens. Watch what happens. Verse 13. Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And he went to her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive. And she gave birth to a son. Now the women said to Naomi, "Praise be to the Lord who in this day has not left you without a kinsman redeemer. May He become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you, is better to you than seven sons, has given him birth." What did I just learn? Not about Ruth. What did I learn about God?
He has
What did I learn about God? He has a purpose. What else? What did I just learn about God?
He answers prayer.
He answers prayer. What do I learn about God?
He knows your heart.
He knows your heart. What do I learn about God?
Takes what seems little and insignificant and uses it to his glory.
He takes what the Bible calls a chance meeting. My old Bible says that when Ruth, she just happened, it says, she just happened to go to that field. She didn't plan on it being Boaz's field. She didn't maneuver. She didn't scheme. She didn't do any of the Hollywood stuff. She just went to get grain, and the field where she happened to go just happened to be Boaz. Because of her devotion to Naomi, her devotion to her God, devotion to her people, Ruth respected all their laws and respected all their customs, and it led her to be married to Boaz. God took a little bitty insignificant chance meeting, and look what he did with it. This baby that they had, what'd they name him? Look what they named him. Give me the name. Obed. Now that's a kind of an odd name, but it sticks in my mind. If you grew up going to Bible class, that kind of sticks in your name, because Obed has a son named Jesse. And I've heard other people named Jesse, but the reason this one sticks in my mind is because I happen to know that Jesse is the father of David, who did what? David, who did what? He killed Goliath and he became king over all of Israel. Now, what's interesting about this is, if you read the rest of chapter 4, is he's going to tell you the family tree of this boy that was born to Ruth. Trace back and tell me who is the great 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 grandfather of Obed. Is a guy named Perez. And that means nothing to us. Nothing to us. You don't hear Perez's name mentioned but once, maybe twice in the whole Bible. So why would Perez be significant? Until you go back and figure out what the family tree of Perez is. Does anybody remember the name of Perez's dad? His name was Judah. Now, you've got to have been a Bible student a while to remember that. Judah was a wicked man, had an incestual sexual relationship with his daughter-in-law. He thought she was a prostitute. It was shameful. This kind of stuff you shouldn't even talk about took place. And an illegitimate boy was born to Judah, and his name was Perez. Does anybody remember whose Judah's son's or dad's name is? Jacob. Does anybody remember Jacob's daddy's name? Isaac. Does anybody remember whose Isaac's daddy's name was? Abraham. Now, that's as far as I'll push you, but just real fun. Abraham is the great, 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 great grandson of a baby was born to take the place of a brother who had been killed by Cain. His name was Seth. So Adam had a boy named Seth who had a great, 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 great grandson named Noah, who had a great-great-great son named Abraham, who led to Isaac, who had a son named Jacob, who had a son named Judah, who had a son named Perez, who had a great-great-great-grandson named Boaz. And Boaz spotted a good-looking Moabite widow and showed her kindness. And because she refused to give up because of circumstances in life, she had lost her husband, and her mother-in-law turns into be bitter, Mara, I want to die, I hate God, Naomi. But she chose to live her life. In spite of circumstances, I'm going to survive. And she got up and worked hard every day. She waited and watched for kindnesses that would come from God. She took care of her vows. She was good to Naomi. And she respected Naomi's God, and she respected Naomi's people. And then she gave birth. She did what God gave her the opportunity to do, birth to a son who's going to be the father of the son, who's going to be the father of the son who sits on the throne and is the great, great, great grandfather of a baby that's born under a star, and angels sing, today born in the city of David is a Savior who's Christ the Lord. Ruth is the great, 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 great grandmother of a baby born in Bethlehem named Jesus. When her husband died, do you think she thought her life was over? I've talked to some widows, and that's exactly what they think. Anybody in this room be able to testify what it's like to have to start all over again, to completely wreck your life and think, man, I have messed up so bad, my life is over? Yeah, done it. And had to start all over again. In every way. And to think, it will never get better. Do you think Ruth ever thought that God would use her to save the world? Probably not. So when you think, when you're as low as you can go, and there is no hope left, there's nowhere else to turn, you've lost everything you had, and you want to give up. God wants you, doesn't want you to give up. He wants to use you to save the world. Your response at that time would be, me? My life the way it is? So what should I do? You tell me. What'd you learn? We're done. You tell me. What do you learn? What do you learn from that? If your life's in that kind of, if it's in that kind of mess, what do you learn?
Survive.
And I'm saying this to some of you, and God love you. I mean, and you ought to count your blessings. Thank God for it. Live this way and enjoy it. There is no recrimination in what I'm about to say at all. You're not hearing any rebuke. Do you hear me? No rebuke at all. Some of you have no idea what this means to be at that point in your life. Enjoy the blessings of your family. Enjoy them. Enjoy the fact that you can call your mom and dad and ask to send money. Enjoy the fact that you can go home and get right in the refrigerator. Enjoy that fact. Do not despise that. Enjoy it, enjoy it, enjoy it, enjoy it. But God forbid, if it happens, and it could, one day you get to the point that you are left without hope. Number one, you've got to survive. Because good stuff can't happen to you unless you survive. Stay alive. Don't sit and wait for somebody to take care of you. Get up and go to work. Get up every morning. Go in early. Stay late. Do what Ruth did. You survive. What else do you do? I like the idea. You look for God's kindness. That's what gives you a little bit of hope. Now let's do it right quick. Give me some kindness from God that you've noticed. And I'm not looking for Sunday school answers. I'm not looking for, well, my family, I've seen the kindness of God in my family. I know that. I want you to tell me some kindness of God you've seen that's specific like this one. Where you've seen this one.
My support being
able. Even more specific. Show me God's kindness. Isn't that amazing? Today is the last day of the month, and when are bills due? The first day of the month. And so when would the supporter have sent money? Before you ever needed money, somebody sat down, took a check, and wrote it out, put it in an envelope, licked it, put a stamp on it, and dropped it in the mail. And it, how many days? 4 or 5 days? How long did it sit at sunset? We don't know. But long before the money ran out, God sent the check. What's that tell you? God know what day bills are due? Yeah. Good one there, good one. Tell me a kindness that you've seen. A kindness that you've seen. When you didn't think there was any kindness left in the world, you saw a kindness. It opened your eyes and said, ooh, God is still for me. God is still on my side.
I've told it before, but a year ago when I was getting a divorce and I had to move out of my house and sell a rent house and find a house to live in, and none of it was, there was no way it was going to work out right. All of it had to time out just exactly right. And there's no way it could have.
It did.
All in one afternoon.
I was going to a church at a place where folks weren't mean to me, but they weren't nice either. And one night a young couple came up to me after church and said, do you want to go with us to eat supper tonight? It was the first outside my family invitation that I had to do anything with people. They have no idea. Well, they do. I've told them, but I don't think they understand the significance of that invitation. It was a little small thing, but it was kindness from God that kept me breathing, that kept me alive. You got to survive. You got to look for God's kindness. What else? Work hard. Get up in the morning. Don't be lazy. Don't sit around and wait for somebody else to take care of you. Get up. Go about your life. Do what you know to do. I don't know everything to do, but I know today I got to get up and do my job.
She laid at his feet. She worked for it. She did something that was humiliating.
What else do you do?
Doing what's right.
I love, yeah. I'll just put the word right up there. You do what's right. She promised. She kept her promise. When you've broken promises, it's not always easy to keep them. But keep the ones you can. Keep your promises. She said, your God will be my God. And she made Naomi's God her God. She said, your people will be my people. And she let her people become her people. Naomi's people became her people. She respected their custom and obeyed God's law. And then, I don't know how to put this, because I don't know that it would ever happen for us, and I can't say it really happened in her, but expect God to change the world through you. Who, me? Yeah. A Moabite widow happens onto a field just by chance is spotted by Boaz, who just happens to marry her, and she happens to have a baby who just happens to be the great 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 grandfather of the Son of God, the Savior of the world. Who will your mate be? Who will your children be? What will God do with your children or your grandchild or your great-grandchild? And while all you may know in your life is hard work and disappointment from what you wished could have been, what can God do through you and through those that follow you in life and in legacy? Let's pray. Father, thank you for today. For these folks.